This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 22nd of March 2019. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 22nd of March, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, the main headlines this week: boost for new hospice, new name for Silver Hill 2, and villagers fight incinerator plan. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is boost for new hospice. Council pledge £500,000 for hospice at RHCH. Plans to build a hospice in Winchester have taken a major step forward after civic chiefs approved grants totalling £500,000. The Winchester Hospice fundraising charity has been awarded £450,000 by Hampshire County Council, while Winchester City Council will give the project £50,000. The grants will help fund the conversion of Burrell House, which is on the site of Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital, into a much-needed 10-bed hospice and palliative care hub, providing specialist care for patients. The news comes after planning permission was granted for the hospice last month. Nick Vaughan, chairman of the fundraising charity's Board of Trustees, said, "This is fantastic news and we are so grateful to the local authorities for their support. We have now reached an important financial milestone, having recently also received planning consent on the design of the conversion. Having raised £2.2 million, we can now go out to tender, and although we still have a way to go to raise our fundraising target of £3 million, this is really an exciting time for Winchester Hospice, as we are closer than ever to our goal of supporting local residents and their families. I want to say a huge thank you to everyone who has fundraised and supported us so far, and ask the local community to continue to get behind the appeal so that we can make Winchester Hospice a reality as soon as possible. Each kind donation will make a lasting difference for years to come." The new funds from Hampshire County Council now bring the authority's contribution to £700,000. Leader Councillor Roy Perry said, "While significant progress has been made in reaching the target goal of £3 million, the project requires additional immediate support in order to be able to move to the next stage. Hospices play such a vital role in communities, and with the rapidly rising demand for this type of care and the wider benefits to Hampshire and its residents, the need for one in Winchester is more pressing than ever. For this reason, I am delighted that we are able to offer an additional £450,000, meaning in total £700,000 from the County Council towards the project, complementing recent funding awards made to Oakhaven Hospice in Lymington and Rowan's Hospice in Havant. This will see a building of historic interest turned into a state-of-the-art hospice on the Royal Hampshire County Hospital site." Winchester County Council leader Councillor Caroline Horrell added, "We're delighted to be able to pledge £50,000, a donation which has helped the project move to the next stage of delivery. We know that the hospice will provide important resources for our residents and their families during the most difficult of times. Winchester Hospice will be run and staffed by Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Council in Winchester." Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospital, said, "It's incredibly exciting that we are one step closer to opening the doors of Winchester Hospice, and that's thanks to the huge support we have received from the community so far, as well as our colleagues at Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council. Our staff and patients have experienced firsthand the difference hospice care can have, and we know the positive difference Winchester Hospice will make to the local community, providing outstanding care and support to patients and their families at what is a very difficult time. As well as providing inpatient care, Winchester Hospice will provide a hub for specialist palliative care in the community through outpatient services, therapies, and caring for people in their own homes." And there is a photograph of the building as it will look on completion. It's an elegant white house, and they've actually built on a glassed out wing, which obviously the whole place will serve its purpose very well.
New name for Silver Hill 2. Welcome to Saxon Gate. That is the new name chosen by Winchester Civic Chiefs for the area of the city currently undergoing major regeneration. The new name was unveiled at the meeting of the City Council Central Winchester Regeneration Committee for the project, commonly known as Silver Hill 2. Council leader Caroline Horrell said Saxon Gate had been proposed by a Winchester resident and was among 98 options that had been suggested. The new name follows City Council plans being unanimously approved to install hoardings around the disused Friars Gate Medical Centre to promote the project. Tuesday's CWR committee meeting also heard an update on plans to renovate Coitby House into new offices. Early designs by architects Henley Hale Brown for the disused 1960s building in Friars Gate were released, revealing the building will have a tower added and the southern side, what will be Friars Gate Passage, will become the main facade to reflect many of the Winchester-ness design features. And there is an artist's impression of Coitby House. Square building, an oblong building with sort of one tower on one higher than the other on the other. Yeah, and lots of windows.
Villagers fight the incinerator plan. And this article is accompanied by a couple of photographs, one showing some of the hundreds of people who attended the recent exhibition in Long Paris, and the other is an artist's impression of the incinerator near Barton Stacey. More than 2,000 people have signed a petition against plans for a waste incinerator in the open countryside. It comes after residents of Barton Stacey and surrounding areas were given the chance to quiz US firm Wheelbrator on its waste-to-energy facility on vacant land owned by Raymond Brown near the A303, just over a mile west of Bullington Cross. The business says that it will be able to process 450,000 tons of waste a year, which will power around 110,000 homes. The petition on website 38degrees.org.uk already has 2,400 signatures and says, "Proposals for a giant incinerator at Barton Stacey are half-baked. If it were to go ahead, it would clog major roads, become a blot on the landscape, and have an erosive impact on the natural environment." Gavin Lockhart-Mirrams, who started the petition, added, "Like tens of thousands of others, my family lives within a few miles of Barton Stacey. Our children go to the local schools, and we rely on visitors to the area for our livelihoods. Of course, everyone thinks they live somewhere special. But for those who have not yet walked in the countryside or visited our vibrant towns and cities, Northwest Hampshire has a wonderful charm. The area combines the rural, unspoilt character of river valley meadows with ancient woodland that provides a rich habitat for a range of animals, plants, and trees. The Barton Stacey incinerator might create 50 new full-time jobs, but the impact on our countryside and the cloying effect on the infrastructure our families rely on means that it should not be granted planning permission." Other residents have also come together to fight the plan. Andy Joliffe, who is heading the campaign, said, "This proposition here, the scale of what they are trying to build, is not in keeping with the rural environment. I don't think people appreciate how big it's going to be." According to Mr. Joliffe, Winchester Cathedral could sit inside the incinerator twice. Mr. Joliffe said that he hopes the company will listen to people's concerns, but the community is already rallying against the scheme. Concerns were expressed about traffic coming through the village of Long Parish if an accident were to occur on the A303, but the company has insisted that lorries will not be diverted there. They, that is, wheel operator, don't seem to be able to explain where the waste is coming from or why. I think it should be close to where they're getting it from, Long Parish Parish Councillor Christian Dryden said it. A Long Parish resident, John Young, said, the size of the thing is a problem. The main thing is a 300-high-foot chimney, which we'll be able to see from our house. People also express fears about the environmental impact that the facility will have. Resident Claire Sykes said that she was disappointed with the plan. Everything from an environmental point of view, lighting pollution, noise pollution. One of my biggest concerns is wildlife. The children go to a wildlife club right next door. From our children's point of view, it is what they are going to have to live with in the future. During the consultation, children from Long Parish Primary School attended the event as part of an environment project. Laura Harding said, my son is going to be here a lot longer than I am. Further down the line, it's going to have an impact on them. I think the sad part about it, we don't feel they're being honest. They have sugar-coated things. No one at the consultation convinced me that it's going to be of any benefit to us. It is a monstrosity of a building. Wheelbrader said that it's in the early stages of the planning process and I quote, we will prepare a comprehensive environmental impact assessment that will look at a wide range of environmental factors. A spokesman said it will take into account views from the public.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. And now we continue with the death announcements and Christian comment, letters, historical items, chronicle comment, letter from Westminster and Belgarum. And then we'll go on to the announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements this week. Gibbings, Mary Agnes Gibbings, who died on the 9th of March, aged 99. Hitchcock, Jane Hitchcock, née Mills, who died peacefully on the 9th of March, aged 67. Kinnell, Andy Kinnell, who died at home on the 10th of March, aged 63. Pope, Joanna Elizabeth Pope, died peacefully at home on the 2nd of March, aged 83. Road Knight, Edith Ann Road Knight, died on the 8th of March after a short illness, aged 84. Excuse me. Star, William Star, who died on the 6th of March, aged 87. Tasker, Ruth Tasker, died on the 7th of March, aged 85. And Vincent, Kathy Lily Vincent, died on the 7th of March, aged 83. And now we move on to Christian comment read by Andrew, please.
And this week's Christian comment, the importance of acts of kindness. Here we are. It's Lent again. The year seemed to go around so fast and we're back in the season of preparation for Easter, a joyful time for Christians. During Lent, we try and make some changes in our lives in the areas of fasting, prayer, and charity. Fasting need not be about what we consume into our bodies in the way of food and drink, but might include fasting from television, social media, or even mobile phones. Imagine that. I'm not sure I can. It is a reminder, every time we are presented with whatever we have decided to give up, that it is Lent, a time for the Lord. Prayer could be finding that 10 minutes quiet a day with your God, any place and any time, but your sacred place to reflect and be calm. Time to be quiet is a gift in our crazy lives. In Hampshire's towns and villages, there are places of quiet to escape to in churches, fields, by rivers and other green spaces. Charity can be giving of money, but also just being kind, concerned, helpful to and about others. I was listening to someone talk with mental health issues And they were talking about being aware in the workplace or your community of people who have problems and asking them if they're okay, really okay. Showing concern and understanding is an act of charity. I went to the Stations of the Cross event last week, a service where we recall and contemplate the events around the trial, torture, and crucifixion of Jesus. In this liturgy, there is a reminder of two people who helped and supported him on this terrible day. Simon of Cyrene, who was deputed to help him carry the cross, and the mother of Jesus, Mary, who with other men and women followed him in his final journey and stayed by the foot of the cross until he died. They represent two ways in which people can help each other. Firstly, helping someone carry his or her cross with whatever practical help can be offered, giving of food, money, doing the shopping, transport, whatever is needed or helpful. Then there is the sitting at the foot of the cross of someone who is ill, bereaved, dying, has lost someone or something. A friend of mine, having suffered a very difficult bereavement some years ago, said to me, "I can't always go to the funeral of another's loved one, or even knock on their door, but I always write a letter." She recalled how kind words and an acknowledgement of her pain was a comfort then, and still is now. Recent atrocities have seen heroes on the scene, but if you are like me, and not much of a hero, then an act of kindness or charity is good enough and will be appreciated. If you can't do that, then a prayer will do this Lent. God will hear it.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, I think you've got the first letter.
And this is from Councillor Guy Ashton, headed Research Needed. Sir, Liberal Democrat councillors Laming and Prince are great supporters of the new Sport and Leisure Centre. I was intrigued, therefore, by their proposal last week, Chronicle Letters, March the 4th, that building a 12-court hall instead of an 8-court hall would attract between 250,000 and 400,000 extra visitors to the new Sport and Leisure Centre per annum. Some 250,000 visitors over a year is equivalent to around 5,000 extra visitors per week. 400,000 would mean an extra 8,000. Multi-person sports can only really take place during weekday peak hours, from, say, 5 p.m. to 10 p.m, and maybe 12 hours a day at weekends, i.e. roughly 50 hourly sessions per week. So, councillors Laming and Prince confidently expect that every hour for 50 hours a week, a minimum of 100 people will simultaneously play badminton on their four extra courts, or netball on the equivalent-sized extra single court. Really? If they do their research, they may find out that a badminton court can fit four people playing doubles, not 25, and that netball is a 7-a-side a game, not 50-a-side. I don't doubt the councillor's sincerity and enthusiasm, but their business analysis needs some work. And these are the people who the Lib Dems want to run the city council's finances. Councillor Guy Ashton, St Michael's Ward, Colebrook Street, Winchester.
Defective. Sir, Adam O'Brien of Metis Homes, Chronicle February the 28th, calls for better collaboration between developers and planners. For this to work, the developers must be trustworthy. I bought a home from a company 50% owned by Metis Homes. 4 years later, it has many unresolved defects, from minor snags to serious breaches of building regulations. The company defaulted on its warranty obligations, severed relationship with its warranty provider, and left us pursuing a complex insurance claim that seems likely to leave us tens of thousands of pounds out of pocket. We will have to move out for weeks. The warranty provider has still made no offer on many of the defects, leaving our homes blighted. As well as construction defects and warranty default, landscaping specified in planning conditions was neither completed nor enforced. Mr. O'Brien talks of collaborating with planning. the distinction between collaboration and self-interested lobbying is an important one, and his position would be more credible if projects his company invested in were built to regulations with planning conditions respected. If he wants to be seen as a fit person for the public sector to collaborate with, he should earn some trust first. And that's from Nick Stafford, Andover Road, Winchester.
This letter is commenting on congestion in Cheswell Street. Air pollution. Sir, I agree with correspondents Miss Agobar and Phil Gagg in his letters in both March the 7th and March the 14th, in their concern about the quality of the air in Winchester, where slow-moving traffic contributes to the build-up of noxious fumes. But this is not the only source of exhaust pollution. I have noticed that drivers of parked vehicles, mainly huge gas-guzzling 4x4s, are leaving their engines running, often for several minutes. While they wait to pick someone up. Why not turn the engine off? I must think this is a personal comment. This is something that's one of my little hobby horses as well. But that letter came from Dinah Ashcroft of West Street, Alsford.
And this from James Anderson, headed Threat to Buses. Sir, South Wanston Parish Council has lobbied Hampshire County Council, HCC, for years for a cycle path to Winchester. In a parish questionnaire, hopelessly flawed, but that's another story, it came out as the most popular item. And although billed as being to Winchester, it is to King's Barton, because after that it unavoidably joins ordinary traffic on Andover Road. The first 500 metres have been built, and the price has been the loss of the primary school bus from Worthy Down to South Wanston Primary School. Some pupils now walk or cycle, but the majority have taken to cars. Now the cycleway is to be extended to King's Barton. It will bring Henry Beaufort School to comfortably within the 3-mile rule for school bus. At present, both HCC and South Wanston Parish Council are saying that there are no plans to discontinue the Henry Beaufort school buses. That won't wash. Rules are rules, and HCC cannot behave as a rule-breaking benefactor. Only exceptional circumstances would then justify the buses. There are about 200 South Wanston children who attend Henry Beaufort. The great majority will transfer to car. It is not as though South Wanston desperately needs a new cycle route to Winchester. There is a good cycle route already via Kingsworthy and Abbots Barton. The new path is looking like a vanity project that is becoming a spectacular own goal by the parish council. Parish residents might wish to contact the clerk at the parish council. The path is the responsibility of HCC and is entirely within Itchen Valley Division, whose electoral representative is the immediate contact. Curiously, St Swithin's Way along the Itchen to Winchester, that also lies in the Itchen Valley Division, is in an abysmal condition. Although improvement would benefit far more people than the South Wanston path, the same HCC division representative is silent on that one. And that from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Unpleasant. Sir, further to recent correspondence about the ivy in Winchester, including the excellent and very critical letter from Ali Kefford, Chronicle, February the 21st, we also had a very unpleasant experience there. We are an older, courteous local couple. We had not been there before and went in for a glass of wine on our way home at 9:45 p.m. My wife went to sit on the right right, where there was a small tables and seating, almost empty, just one couple further down. I ordered two glasses at the bar and joined my wife. A young man in his 20s in a suit and tie strutted over and said we could not sit there and had to drink at the bar. I was reasonably and politely asked why to be told, "You can't drink at the tables." I asked why, when there was virtually no one there. Response, standing over us, "Don't be argumentative with me." My wife said, "He is not, he is just asking." His manner was arrogant and self-important, completely devoid of any charm and courtesy, and with a very unfriendly attitude problem. He just stood there until we moved. We left, asking ourselves, who on earth do you think you are? They are so condescending, as if we should all be grateful for the privilege of being able to enter the Ivy in Winchester. The next day, I handed in a formal letter of complaint, giving the facts and referring to the high-handed, arrogant and confrontational behaviour, and saying, never again, and we shall certainly not recommend the Ivy to anyone. That was totally ignored, and we had no response. I then sent a copy to the Ivy in London, and again completely ignored. Their approach is clearly, how dare you have the temerity to complain about the Ivy? Like Ali Kefford, we know so many other establishments here where they welcome you and provide an admirable service. Never again. I would rather go to Sweeney Todd to have my hair cut. And that was from Roger Davey, Rosemary Close, Winchester.
This letter's titled, Shocked. Sir, I am so shocked to read the article by George Hayter, titled Trump's Wall Might Do Good, which is in the Chronicle, March 14. The article, reinforced by a finger-wagging image, suggests that frustrating the president's policy to build a wall will risk invoking a white American voter's backlash. The article subtly invokes race as a source of conflict. Mr. Hayter refers to many clashes across the globe, relating these events to illegals who are flooded in to California and to strong UK immigration controls. Justification is sought by reference to ethnic minorities in Southampton who know that a racial influx could cause resentment. His article contains disarmingly simple phrases, but they come from a superficial representation of a worldwide crisis. The article disarms with references to the industrial genocide of a Nazi regime, but underlying these words is a sense of, I'm not a racist, but. The alarm bell for me is that he visited a former concentration camp and came away unable to connect events behind these fences with Trump's wall. Perhaps, also on his journeys by coach, through borders open to him, he did not see the refugees at the ports, seeking just one chance at a life. Perhaps he did not notice the increasingly insidious fencing and barriers around our ports, points of entry. I fear that, reinforced by articles like this, many are moving towards acceptance of these divisions. It's a small step from illegals to the concept of us and them, resonating throughout the article. Contrast this with the message of the New Zealand Prime Minister 24 hours after the massacre of a largely refugee group of prayer in Christchurch, simply, boldly, and humanely recognizing that these people are us. There are many who do not share our values, but they are us. Building a wall will not change their minds. Whilst Mr. Hayter has a right to his opinion, it should not go unchallenged. Finally, this newspaper has a social responsibility to promote an open and diverse platform for the community, or it contributes to the slippery slope of populist and dangerous rhetoric. And that letter is from Derek Cheshire, Shoe Lane, Upham.
And this from Kate McIntosh, Fabhab Housing. Sir, I do not recognise Jonathan Greatsix's description of the HAB, H-A-B, housing at King's Barton as resembling Derbyshire miners' cottages, letters March 14th. The two-up, two-down terraces of the industrial north have their own gritty charm, but they bear no resemblance whatever to this Arcadian development. On a recent visit, I spoke with two of the residents who pronounced themselves delighted with their homes and considered them spacious and very well detailed. I saw for myself that the standard of landscape design, both hard and soft, was excellent, though in places still to be completed. Careful thought has been put into connectivity to the village centre via footpaths and cycleways. The frustration is with the delayed completion of some of the promised communal facilities. but when compared with what is coming off the stocks at King's Barton and what promises to spoil my view to the south on the former police HQ site off Rumsey Road, this is a flagship scheme, particularly in the careful designing in of photovoltaic arrays, reducing the energy bills of residents and contributing to our national pledge to reduce CO2 emissions. I note that this is an aspect of the design which Mr. Greatrix regards with particular contempt. As to the delay in full completion, the average build-out time by our four major house builders, from the granting of planning consent to the occupation of the last dwelling, this stands at 15.5 years. Compared with that record, King's Barton looks a great achievement. And that's from Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, of West End Terrace, Winchester.
Ubiquitous eggs. Sir, eggs play such a large part in our lives, including, of course, the Easter festival. Children love to hunt the Easter eggs and to eat their prize. Eggs are a symbol of potential life, and the word features frequently in our vocabulary. Some of us save hard and invest wisely to build a nest egg. We egg people on to do things they really don't want to, and we know that it's prudent not to put all our eggs in one basket. Embarrassment can leave us with egg on our faces, and we choose our words very carefully when we are treading on eggshells. We tend to mock people who are not quite as sharp as others by calling them bird brains, which is completely wrong, for birds are such intelligent creatures. On the other hand, egghead is said to be a very clever person. The aubergine is also known as the eggplant, and paint can have an eggshell finish. I'm sure we would all love to own a beautiful Fabergé egg. But we can just dream. And that's from Daphne E. Smith, The Pastures, Cheriton.
We got a couple of letters now on the same subject, but they're titled Propaganda. Sir, a few days ago, the postman delivered what appeared to be a tabloid-type publication from the Conservatives, entitled About Winchester. Headlines on the articles on the front page were printed in blue, and the stories throughout put a positive gloss on the various council initiatives. On closer inspection, this publication was seen to have been produced by Winchester City Council, which is effectively hung between the Conservatives and the Lib Democrats. I wonder, did both parties agree to spend taxpayers' money in this pre-election period, including expensive delivery by post on what seems to me to be tantamount to a Conservative sheet? And that letter was from Susan Chesters of Domham Road, Winchester. And a letter on the same theme. Sir, I have just received my Winchester City Council About Winchester edition. On the front page is a reminder. Don't forget to vote in the coming local elections. Inside there is a ward map showing the new housing developments being planned. Imagine my surprise to see the wards and boundaries shown are those that were changed in 2016. Why is the council still working on such outdated boundaries? And that's a letter from Andrew Beadle, Milestown Place, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we move on to historical items. So we're stepping back in time. Nikki.
200 years ago, Monday, March the 22nd, 1819, a merchant who was travelling a short distance on horseback stopped at nightfall at an inn in a little village. On the following morning, he left the inn and proceeded on his journey. He had not gone far when he was overtaken by his two companions of the preceding evening, who accosted him and offered him his choice, whether he would be stabbed to death or thrown into the river. He prayed to them to spare his life, but the robbers bound him and flung him in the river.
And 100 years ago, Saturday, March the 22nd, 1919, the cordial and kindly spirit which animates our American friends was again illustrated this week. The branch of the United States Naval Air Service that have been at Eastleigh number among some very clever performers, vocal and instrumental, and there have been opportunities of hearing the jazz band at Winchester. The mayor received an offer from them to give two performances under any conditions he desired, and his worship has accepted it for two performances on Wednesday. And the second item, the annual general meeting of the Winchester and District Agricultural Association was held at the Castle Winchester at noon on Saturday. The secretary said he has been asked by Earl Northbrook to express his regret that he was not able to be present. There were domestic reasons which detained the Countess of Northbrook in London.
And from 50 years ago, Saturday, March the 22nd, 1969, and there's some lovely irony in this piece. The £350,000 scheme for an indoor swimming bath and sports centre to be built in Northwall's Recreation Ground, Winchester, is making progress. On Monday, the City Council Libraries, Museums and Lands Committee were presented with advanced sketch plans and were able to inspect a model of the scheme. The consultant architect, Mr. K.E. Gillen, said a swimming pool, a trainee pool, sauna baths, a squash court, sports hall, space for a restaurant, lavatories and a car park had been included in the project. Approval for the centre was given 4 years ago, but Mr. Gillen said there was nothing in the plans that would mean an increase in the costs, originally estimated at £350,000.
And 25 years ago, Friday, March the 25th, 1994, work is underway to transform a derelict building into Hampshire's biggest purpose-built exhibition to mark the 50th anniversary of D-Day. Winchester's Peninsula Barracks off Romsey Road will be the site of a major exhibition recording the dramatic events of 1944 and the vital role that the Hampshire Regiment, Light Infantry, Royal Green Jackets, Royal Hussars and Royal Observer Corps played in its success. The barracks is now home to Winchester's military museums, which are organising the exhibition, and the coordinator, Sue Dennis, and members of the ROC Museum have been given the mammoth task of converting the former cookhouse into a large-scale exhibition. Visitors will be able to walk across a mock-up of the English Channel during their tour around the exhibition, which incorporates Britain's south coast and the Normandy beaches. From barracks, bivouacs and billets to the beaches of Normandy has taken a year to prepare and tells the story of the soldier from training in Scotland and southeast England to the liberation of Paris. It also gives an insight into civilian life in Winchester and the thoughts of the German forces who were kept guessing as to the precise date and location of the invasion. And the second item, Winchester City Council is taking a look at the delivery of its housing management services. This is in response to government policies on market testing and competition for the supply of local services. Over the next few months, the council is to investigate the most effective way to ensure that council houses in the Winchester district are well managed in the best interests of tenants and the local community. This could involve passing the day-to-day management of the council's 6,000 homes to a private management organisation or to a housing association, who could take over the council's frontline housing management staff. At the same time, a detailed investigation will see if it will be in the best interests of residents and staff for the council's contracting department, Winchester City Services, to move into the private sector. Now we come back up to date for editorial comment, please.
And it will development's new name endure? So, Saxon Gate it is then. There were 98 suggestions from the public for the new name for the Central Winchester Regeneration Area, more commonly known as Silver Hill, the area between the Broadway and Friars Gate that is set for a £100 million plus redevelopment. The short list of names was Alfred's Gate, King Alfred Quarter, the Central Quarter, Alfred Quarter, Brook Quarter, Riverside, Saxon Gate, Anglo-Saxon Quarter, Alfred's Place, King Alfred's View and King's Quarters. The City Council took the view that the historic name for the main street in the area, Silver Hill, was somehow a toxic name because of the collapse of the first Silver Hill scheme in 2016. The Chronicle disagreed, arguing that a historic name, dating from the time when medieval tradesmen gathered their businesses in the area, was more enduring than a concocted modern name. The City Council revealed the new name at a meeting on Tuesday evening. Will the name Saxongate capture the public imagination? Does it trip off the tongue and engage people, as the marketing people might say? Time will tell. It will be interesting to look back in a decade's time and see what the public are calling the area. Hopefully the redeveloped area of shops, offices, homes and a new museum, see page 2 for the latest news, will be something with which the city and Hampshire is proud.
And now we move on to a letter from Westminster. Norma.
Each weekend, I make time to knock on doors and chat with constituents. It's a little-known part of an MP's routine, unless you open the door. But it's the perfect anecdote, especially right now, to the Westminster Village and its exhausting 24-hour news agenda. This month's column is not about Brexit. Writing on Monday morning, it's hard to know what tomorrow brings, let alone the end of the week, so I will endeavour, as always, to keep constituencies updated. They say to govern is to choose, and that is true in local politics as much as national. My door knocking right now is in support of those hard-working individuals who put themselves forward to represent us on the local council, and in Winchester we have City Council led by Councillor Caroline Horrell that has made its choice. A choice for sound financial management at the Guildhall, which means our council is not cutting services, it's investing thanks to the skill of Winchester's Chancellor, Councillor Guy Ashton. And that is the choice I see played out time and again to our benefit, whether it be new council homes, I opened this month in Stanmore, the ability to freeze council tax for 2019-2020, or introduce doorstep glass recycling as part of Councillor Jan Warwick's Green Winchester agenda. That is a choice I saw at Chesil Lodge recently, the new extra care facility built via a partnership between Hampshire County Council and Winchester City after a generous gift. It is now home to more than 50 residents aged 55 or over who can retain independent living and the security of access to on-site care. It's a place of hope. It frees up family homes as people downsize and ease the pressure on our NHS while tackling isolation and loneliness. Councillors matter in our community, and the values they hold, shown by the choices they make, have a direct impact on our lives. I have a very different job to do in the constituency and in Parliament stroke government. But we work as a strong local team, and I am always wanting to encourage new people from different backgrounds to come forward. People like former Hong Kong and Southampton police officer Andy Lai, who will bring something new and be Winchester's first councillor from the Chinese community. If successful in Coldon Common and Twyford, women currently hold 50% of cabinet posts in Winchester City Council, and that is a positive choice too. Over the course of the next 6 weeks, we may knock on your door, and when we do, ask what your council can do for you, and remember, in May, the choice becomes yours. Finally, readers will know that last summer I published a world-leading plan to tackle childhood obesity. It's one of the challenges of our age. This week, and the constituents may have seen it covered in the national media, I announced the government will consult on ways to protect children across TV and online from junk food adverts. Much more of my work locally and in Parliament you can see on www.stevebryne.com. And that was obviously from Steve Bryne MP.
Thank you. And now we have a couple of items from Bill Garham, the alternative look at the news. Andrew.
And the first one of those is Joe meets his Saints hero. And it's accompanied with a picture of Joe Grant with the Southampton Football Club captain Pierre Emile. And I apologise to all of you who are Saints fans, but I can't remember how to pronounce his surname. However, an Alsford 12-year-old with cerebral palsy spent time with the captain of Southampton Football Club, Pierre Emile. Joe Grant regularly attends the Saints Foundation's Regional Talent Hub and the invite-only Advanced Coaching Centre, and has been described by the club as a player with huge potential. He was joined by the Danish midfielder to complete drills and ask questions about his footballing career. Joe said, "I get treated like a normal player at the Saints Foundation. It's amazing. Really fun with new experiences. I love football, and the Foundation has given me a good opportunity to play." The young talent currently plays with Alsford Town Youth Football Club and has ambitions to play for England's cerebral palsy team as well as compete at the Paralympics. And the second article is about a library or a coffee shop and is accompanied with a photograph of the extended cafe at the Winchester Discovery Centre. We all know the Winchester Discovery Centre is supposed to be more than just a library. Hence the rebranding when it was reopened more than a decade ago. Further proof has been shown by the recent expansion of the cafe in the new wing. Previously, home to shelves of novels, the tables and chairs have extended their reach. Belgarin would assert that most people step through the doors of the former library to look at books and magazines rather than have a cup of coffee. There are plenty of places in Winchester to have a snack, but not many where you can, well, legally anyway, take away the books.
Thank you. Now we move on to the announcements with and what's on. And we've got two items for what's on. The Jersey Boys, excuse me, the Jersey Boys is running at the Mayflower Theatre, Southampton, and that's on until the 30th of March, so it's on for another week. For tickets and information, telephone 02380 711 811. That's 02380 711 811. And in Alton, on Saturday the 30th of March, 7:30 p.m, Alton Concert Orchestra is performing their spring concert at Alton College. And if you want tickets for that, they're obtainable from First Exchange, 16 Market Square. Excuse me, Market Square, Alton. So that's from First Exchange, 16 Market Square, Alton, and they've not provided us with a phone number, I'm afraid. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 22nd of March at 6:04 a.m. and begins at 6:21 p.m. And next Wednesday the 27th of March, it ends at 5:53 a.m. and begins at 6:29 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And now we continue with further items of general news from the Chronicle. Nikki.
And this one headed, protests as uni proposes job cuts. Around 100 students staged a protest at Winchester University after more than 100 lecturers were put on risk of redundancy. A spokesman for Winchester University has confirmed 118 members of academic staff have been invited to consider voluntary severance, although the spokesman added the university is looking to cut between 30 and 40 full-time equivalent FTE posts. Yesterday, students protested at the Sparkford Road campus over the plan cuts, which have been branded unjust. The protest was organised by third-year drama student Lottie Dean-Clist, who said, "The way the redundancies have only just been announced made it more of a shock for all of us. It seems like the whole thing was covered up and silenced before this. After the news escaped, tensions rose and it's been affecting learning since. It just feels like it's opened a new world of stress. I've always been taught to use my arts training as a transformation tool, so making my own demo felt right. Around 100 people turned up and it felt fantastic. I'd imagine everyone else is very upset." Another student, Samuel Morton, told the Chronicle the cuts would have a profound impact on the quality of teaching for current and future students. He added, "We believe that these cuts are unjust and that the manner with which they are being executed lacks transparency. many people have been left in the dark about whether their jobs, livelihood are at stake, having received very little in the way of correspondence from the university. The protesters say the event at the Sparkford Road campus was held to secure a meeting with the Dean or Vice-Chancellor, and it received support from the University and College Union. Regional official Murray McCauley said, "We welcome the support of students who will undoubtedly be affected by jobs losses, as staff working conditions are students' learning conditions." In a statement, a university spokesman said, "Like many other institutions within the higher education sector, the university is having to rebalance staffing. Members of staff from across the institution have been invited to consider voluntary severance under the scheme, with a view to reducing between 30 to 40 full-time equivalent posts." And there are a lot of photographs of this demonstration, obviously of the various students, but some of their placards, I might tell you. The first, "No lecturers equals little learning. Save our lecturers." "Every artist was first an amateur." "Pay cuts or pay rises, whose pockets?" And then a rather clever one which says, "Have a heart," and the art part of the word heart is highlighted in red. And one last one, "Dumbledore would never have allowed it."
Villagers revive battle to save fields from homes. More than 100 protesters took to the proposed site of a major housing development in Otterbourne. Villagers are again campaigning against the development company Gladman, which has approached Winchester City Council to build 90 homes on the field behind the Old Forge pub in Main Road. The firm first sought permission in August 2016, but withdrew the application on May 2017 after a long battle with residents, who filed a total of 315 objections. The new application is almost identical to the last, which has sparked anger among the residents. Carol Hawkins, a member of the Save Otterbourne in 2016, has helped revive the action group. "We got around 140 people on the field. Thankfully, it had stopped raining from the day before, so everyone could get out and show their support. The protest just goes to show that everyone is of the same mind, that it is important that we all object. We are all supporting each other. The group now has 20 people knocking doors to tell people about the situation and help people to object if they need to know how." The field is one of the biggest green spaces in Otterbourne, and it is frequently used by dog walkers. Carol added, "The owners of the field don't seem to be looking after the field anymore. It feels like they're letting it go to try and make us let go. But it is a very well-used area, and mental health comes into the question too. Having green spaces is important. You can't just have buildings everywhere. That's why lots of people move here for the rural scene." So far, the City Council has received more than 150 objections. Gladman has been unavailable for comment. A planning decision is due by March the 27th, and there is a picture of all the protesters with their children standing in the field.
And this is a report on the shed's first year. Alsford Men's Shed has reported a successful year at their recent annual general meeting. The shed opened in 2017 and offers a range of activities for people in middle and advanced years. In attendance were Brian Durham, who's the chairman, Ralph Poynter, Peter Tudor, Michael Hampton, Clive Earthy, Dave Dustin, Graham Rothery, Howard Bagley, Jim Baggin, Jim Scott, Patrick Stratton, and Robert Deere. The chairman opened this inaugural trustees report and summarised the achievement of setting up and operating the shed. Mr. Durham listed the main activities: setting up a workshop where members can engage in worthwhile activities, in cooperation with Alsford Pigs, providing a hub where the community can obtain a variety of beneficial aids, such as mobility scooters, etc. In liaison with Alsford Youth Association, providing youth technology classes for 8-year-olds, and running DIY classes for women. Given the increasing activities being undertaken within the organisation, the chairman stated that the additional support for trustees was urgently required. He invited members to consider becoming trustees or to take on specific responsibilities, such as marketing, social secretary, and fundraising. A £500 grant from Alsford Ladies Group had been placed in the new building fund, although if needed, it could be used for other purposes. The fund currently totaled £5,000. The nomination of Ralph Poynter as secretary was made by Brian Durham and unanimously agreed. A group visit is being arranged for April the 24th to the Greenleaf Workshop in Fareham, followed by a pub lunch and a possible visit to the Fareham Men's Shed. As the workshop is small, numbers will be limited to 10. Volunteers will be needed to assist with the setting up, running and close down of our Watercress Festival stall on May 19th. Alsford Pigs have approached the Men's Shed to supply fate-type games for their duck race event on June the 16th.
VAT bill closes City Centre Cafe. A Winchester cafe has been permanently closed after the owner was told she owed more than £10,000 for exceeding the VAT threshold. Dee Stewart first opened the Gallery Cafe in King's Walk nearly 12 years ago, but has now filed for bankruptcy. The 60-year-old received a bill for £13,000 after it was discovered she had not been charging value-added tax when she should have been. She said, "The customers don't want me to go. It's such a friendly place in here. People come in and we listen to their problems. The staff get on like a family. When I told them what was happening, they were of course upset. They're all young. Some of them have other jobs to go to, but others are going to need to find one." If a business's taxable turnover exceeds £85,000, it must register for VAT. Dee told the Chronicle that she'd been offered a job at Sweet Ice Cream Parlour, a stone's throw away from her cafe, but is unsure whether she will take on the role. She added, "In my heart, I would like to open another cafe because I enjoy it so much. But I'm 60 now, and by the time I've sorted everything out, I'll probably be too old." And there's a photograph of rather downhearted Dee Stewart outside her Gallery Cafe in King's Walk.
Airport cleared to fell trees close to runway. Residents' musical protests against the Southampton Airport's plan to destroy ancient woodland failed to strike a chord with city planners. The group of protesters, accompanied by a guitarist and a trumpeter, sang songs on the step of the Civic Centre before a planning meeting to decide the fate of 27 trees which stand beyond the perimeter of the airport on land to the south of the M27. Their efforts were in vain as the council's planning committee approved the application to fell part of the copse popular with walkers. According to Gareth Narbed, a leading figure in the Friends of Mar Hill Copse, residents were devastated by the decision. The group want to protect the trees, which they say help to absorb carbon dioxide as well as act as a barrier against the noise from both the airport and the nearby M27. The council gave permission for the work at Mar Hill Copse to go ahead on the grounds of aviation safety. However, the airport must obtain a felling licence from the Forestry Commission and plant a replacement tree for everyone cut down. The airport said it bought the land on which the tree stands in August last year with the intention of removing some trees and pruning others. Airport bosses said they do not have plans to develop the site. A spokeswoman explained the work is to ensure planes can take off and land safely. And there's a picture of the protesters with their trumpet and their guitar.
Support group. A Winchester care home has launched a new support group for people wanting to gain a better understanding of dementia. Tickfield House's first session offered families, who each have a relation in the home with dementia, the chance to talk, listen and share experiences. General Manager Joe Aitken and Deputy Manager Jackie Standing welcomed 8 people to the home in Chilbolton Avenue. Joe said, "We are a friendly and caring home, so a support group seemed like a good idea." Our staff are keen to make a positive difference to the lives of our residents and their families. We have a little community here at Tegfield House, and we think of all of the relatives as family, and we want to be there to support them. Loving a person who is older and living with dementia can be confusing and even a little sad at times. Those who love them matter hugely to us as well, and we are pleased to be able to listen, and we look forward to seeing more people at the next meeting. The support group will continue every 8 weeks and is open to new members with a relation in the home. Jackie said, "I often speak to residents' families who watch the behaviours of their loved one change over time. They have questions and want to find ways to connect so they can still spend quality time together. Dementia is a difficult topic to understand, so I approached a few families to tell them my idea, and they agreed that it would be beneficial to meet. It's all about creating understanding, empathy, and awareness."
And this one, which could come with a warning like you get before a film on television, which says, "There is violence, but it doesn't have any scenes of a sexual content or flashing lights. Man jailed for killing cockerel with a skewer. A Mian Valley man has been jailed after a video surfaced of him beating a cockerel to death with a metal kebab skewer. James Goddard of Males Close in Wickham was found guilty in his absence of one offence of causing unnecessary suffering to a bird by beating it to death, but he failed to attend court, so a warrant was issued for his arrest. Police investigating an unrelated matter had discovered a video of Goddard on a mobile phone. The footage showed the 27-year-old wearing a blue vest chasing a cockerel around a fenced area with a metal pole. RSPCA Chief Inspector Will Mitchell described the footage, "Goddard chases the bird around taking swipes with the 3-foot-long metal skewer like a baseball bat. He grabs hold of the cockerel, holds him upside down by his feet, and while the bird frantically flaps around, tries to escape his clutches, he beats his head with the pole. He swings at the poor bird again and again, hitting him on the head like a pinata. It's absolutely shocking to watch. His violent behaviour and the savage cruelty he shows towards this bird is difficult to comprehend." Goddard appeared at a Southampton magistrate's court last Thursday and was jailed for 18 weeks, disqualified from keeping animals for 5 years, fined £750, and ordered to pay a victim surcharge of £115. Sergeant Andy Williams from the County Watch team said, "We are pleased that Goddard has finally been punished for what is a shocking and cowardly act against the animal." And there's a picture of James Goddard grinning very cockily out at everybody, wearing a small trilby straw hat.
College students boost for ecology at homeless base. Volunteers from Sparshot College have used their knowledge of ecology to transform a community area in Winchester. The university's centre's fisheries team assisted charity members at Emmaus Hampshire's Winchester base at Bar End by climbing into the pond to clear overgrown vegetation. Sports, fisheries and aquaculture degree student Ben Lee, aquatic and research conservation centre technician Steve Jensen, and fisheries, aquaculture and marine ecology lecturer Dr. Adrian Love successfully completed the project in one morning. Jake Payne, support and facilities manager at Emmaus Hampshire, said, "We want to say a huge thank you to the team from the University Centre Sparshot for using their expert knowledge to bring new life to our community pond. This has hugely improved the area for the companions we support, and we have already seen a resurgence in the number of newts making the ponds their home. We look forward to working with them to maintain the ponds throughout the year." Emmaus is a social enterprise to support people who have been experienced homelessness and social exclusion. Dr. Love said the Sparshot team were delighted to assist Emmaus Hampshire with its project to improve the facilities for Emmaus residents to enjoy. "We're looking forward to seeing the project develop over the summer months and seeing the ecosystem flourish." And there are three pictures of the three men in waders, and they seem to be heaving the most revolting-looking stuff from the pond. And there is a final picture with the pond looking lovely and clean.
A hometown show for an actor.
Sorry.
A hometown show for an actor. Winchester actor Ben Craze has never performed in his home city since starting a career in 1984. But that is set to change when a national tour hits the Theatre Royal. The Cyprus-born showman, and there's a picture of him here, is playing Sid James in Hancock's Half Hour, and the stage show, which is already headlined in Salisbury and Basingstoke as part of a 2019 tour. Ben, who jokingly confirmed his last name, quote, is a real one, moved to the city when he was 5 weeks old and spent most of his childhood here, attending the Western School and Peter Simmons. He now lives in Staple Gardens, a stone's throw from the theatre. Ben told the Chronicle, "A lot of actors never do perform in their hometowns. I've been to some close cities so far, but I'm really looking forward to seeing my friends and family in the audience. I'm also a local Blue Badge tour guide, so it'll be good to see my fellow guides there as well." Ben's 91-year-old mother, Barbara Craze, will also be in the audience. Hancock's Half Hour will headline Theatre Royal Winchester on March the 24th. Tickets cost £23 with concessions available and can be booked online, in person, or by calling the box office.
And we should say, Ben's mother, Barbara, is one of our listeners. So hope you enjoy this, Barbara.
Council backs call for Great British Spring Clean. Winchester residents are being urged to help clean the district streets, parks and green spaces for this year's Great British Spring Clean. The City Council will support the annual event, run by environmental charity Keep Britain Tidy. It will run from March the 22nd to April the 23rd, with more than 500,000 people across the country pledging to get picking to make Britain cleaner. City Council Portfolio Holder for Environment, Councillor Jan Warwick, said, "We are so fortunate to have a beautiful and green district, but it is vital it has kept looking at its best, and the problem of litter is one that requires us all to play our part. The continued scourge of plastic and rubbish ruins the environment and blights our district. But by taking part in this campaign, residents can help make this district a better place to live for us all. The council will assist parishes and litter picking groups by providing free high visibility jackets, litter pickers and black bags, which they will collect after the event. Last year, 630,000 bags of rubbish were collected nationwide." And there is a photograph of the litter pickers in their high-vis jackets, two men, two women, and a large bin-like thing for collecting all the rubbish.
Winners in art competition. Anticipation was in the air at Pilgrim School as around 200 pupils gathered for the final of an art competition. Finalists from 12 primary schools awaited the results from the Birds in Flight art competition, organised by the Cameron Bespoker Trust. The total of 37 prizes were awarded, including bird feeders, a bird watching book and other gifts on a nature theme. Overall winner Danny Perrin from St Bede was awarded the Cameron Bespoker Art Award by Tom Burden, headmaster of Pilgrims, and Anna Schofield from the RSPB, for his painting of a kingfisher. Mr. Burden said, "It's a pleasure to support the Trust with this inspiring initiative that connects so many local primary school children with wildlife. Art is such a wonderful way to observe and appreciate nature. Pilgrims is delighted to host this art competition, as Cameron was a former pupil here, and it's a great way to team up with our local school community." St Bede also picked up the school prize and were awarded a giant bag of birdseed donated by Pets Corner. Head teacher Sarah Duck said, "We work hard at St Bede's C of E Primary School to promote a broad curriculum underpinned by a range of real life experiences. We were so impressed by the standard of work children produced, and it was lovely that this was acknowledged through prizes and commendations awarded to them. The judges, Sharon Harvey, Taya Ashfar, Puff Morgan-Giles, are all local artists and are joined by Jane Jenner, former head of art at Pilgrims. Puff said, "The amount of entries and effort was so impressive. A wide variety of media was used, from detailed drawings and expressive paintings to mixed media and collage. It was obvious that the birds had been well observed. All entries were displayed during the ceremony. These were submitted by pupils from the following schools: St Bede, Osborne All Saints, St Faith's, King's, Oliver's Battery, Wick, St Peter's, St Swithin's, Prince's Mead, Pilgrims and Stanmore Primary." And there is a lovely picture of all the students gathered there, primary students, and there is an enlarged picture of the winning painting. And I must say, it is absolutely exceptional. It is a wonderful picture of the kingfisher catching a fish, and it's absolutely amazing. It's beautiful.
Planners approved the plan for Pet Cemetery. Plans have been approved to turn a piece of open land into a pet cemetery. The application by Bishop's Waltham Parish Council will now see the ashes of small animals such as dogs, cats, rabbits and guinea pigs buried on the land near the cemetery in Hoe Road. The scheme received 10 letters of objection prior to the meeting, but no one spoke out against the scheme when it appeared before Winchester City Council's Planning Committee last Thursday. Concerns range from fears a precedent would be set, as there are currently no other pet cemeteries in the parish, to fears that it would create upset being near to the human cemetery. Sophie Buckland of New Road, Swanmore said, "I strongly object, as I have several members of family laid to rest in the cemetery, and I don't think animals should be laid in the same place." Georgina Kempster of Windmill Lane, Burselton added, "I think it's morally wrong that you should consider having pets laid to rest at a long-standing cemetery for humans. If this type of thing is needed in the area, another site should be found." However, the scheme was unanimously approved by the committee with little debate. Councillor Eileen Berry, one of the few councillors to speak on the matter, said, "We are animal lovers in this country. I don't see anything wrong with allowing a piece of land for those who want to have a burial." According to the plans, the pet cemetery would be adjacent to, but quite separate from, the main cemetery. Plots would be 50 centimetres in length and width. Those using the facility would be able to have an inscribed memorial tablet if they wished, and it's thought the plans would have enough space to fill at least a decade's demand.
Estate agents become star bakers. The Winchester branch of a global property company has raised more than £360 for Cancer Research UK in a TV-style baking fundraiser. Hamptons International, based in the High Street, hosted their version of the Great British Bake Off as part of its 2019 fundraising programme. Employee Olivia won the Star Baker Award for her rainbow cake. This year marks Hampton's 150th birthday, and as part of the celebrations, the company has raised £150,000 for Cancer Research UK. And as a photograph of them all outside Hampton International Winchester branch, and they're all wearing face masks of the various presenters. And I know that there's Paul Holloway and Sandy Toksvig, but I don't know the names of the other two. Maybe you do.
Ram raids bollards proposed. Plans have been submitted to erect anti-ram raid bollards in front of Kingsworthy shop after it was burgled last year. The Tesco's Express on Springvale Road was badly damaged in November after a JCB was used to steal the cash point. An application has been received by Winchester City Council to place three concrete-filled bollards to prevent a similar attack. One resident, Tony Stevens, has filed an official objection, saying, Whilst I appreciate the possible need for such fortifications in front of the ATM, I believe that no attempt has been made to mitigate the obtrusive nature of the proposed bollards, such as they might be hidden or not seen as such an eyesore. Why can't they be hidden as part of the new hedge or some other landscaping that might ameliorate the visual effect of these three large steel bollards standing like sentries outside a small country-style shop? I would also comment that the new ATM, in terms of size, is a massive structure inside the shop itself, and these bollards may be a bit of overkill, so to speak. The identity of the Ram Raiders is still unknown, and the police spokesman has confirmed that the investigations are ongoing. A decision on the application is due by the 23rd of April.
Permit cost increase has been dropped. An increase in residents' parking charges, dubbed a poll tax on parking, has been suspended, Winchester's civic chief has confirmed. The cost of permits for motorists have been set to rise by as much as 246% after Hampshire County Council approved a move to fund highways services. The new increased charges would have seen Winchester residents with a car paying £50 a year, more than double their current £22 a year fee, although it would be below the £64 national average. Now, City Council leader Caroline Horrell says she has struck a deal with the county to halt the rise, which is due to come into effect from next month. Councillor Horrell said, "I am delighted to announce good sense prevails for the city's residents." The county had wanted to take over responsibility for on-street permits, which the City Council has overseen on an agency basis. However, we have our movement strategy in development, and I argued it was essential that all parking matters are linked to it. Following the agreement, the changes have been suspended while the movement strategy is developed. Then both councils will reassess the future of on-street parking charges. Moving forward, this gives us time to examine the whole issue with the County Council, how it fits within the movement strategy, and how we can remain in control of administrating the scheme, while in the meantime, residents and businesses will not pay a penny more. As previously reported, the Winchester City Council had been due to decide whether it wanted to continue operating the service or hand it back to the County Council. The increase was proposed in a bid to run the service on full cost recovery basis and not be subsidised by the district's on-street parking accounts, partly made up of cash from fines and tickets.
Charity call for more volunteers. A Winchester charity is calling for new members to help local stroke survivors on the road to recovery. The Winchester Stroke Support Group, supported by a national organisation from Stroke Association, is run by volunteers and meets on Mondays at St Barnabas Church Hall, Fremont Road, Week. Mandy Souter, Support Coordinator at the Stroke Association, said, "We have around 10 group members of different ages and backgrounds who all have one thing in common, they're survivors. The condition can be absolutely devastating, but with the right help and support, people can make fantastic recoveries, and that's what the group is all about. The group puts on a range of activities, including games, crafts, and they regularly go out for a meal. The group are looking for at least 3 volunteers who will plan and lead sessions, coordinate activities, communicate information, and manage money. Full training will be provided." Mandy added, "Support from the Winchester Stroke Support Group can make a real difference to a stroke survivor's recovery and mental well-being. Without the support of local volunteers, we couldn't be there for people who need help through one of the most difficult and frightening periods of their lives. To register an interest, call Mandy on 07 515 596 920.
Medal Hall for Simmons. Science students from Winchester College are celebrating after taking home 9 medals from the British Biology Olympiad. The Peter Simmons team of 7 were awarded 3 gold, 4 silver and 2 bronze medals at the competition, which is the largest national biology event for sixth formers, and this is organised by the Royal Society of Biology. Julian Foster, a biology teacher at the college, said, "Our biology students are a talented and motivated group, and we are very proud of these fantastic results. It is wonderful to be able to offer them the opportunities like this to extend their interest in the subject and receive recognition." Gold medal winner Tommy Kelly qualified for the second round of the competition at Warwick University, placing him in the top 16 of entrants his age in the country. If successful, he will join 3 other students representing the UK at the International Olympiad in Hungary in July. Mr. Foster added, "We look forward to supporting Tommy as he progresses to the next round of the competition." Silver medal winning student Lucy Saville said, "The Biology Olympiad was a great opportunity to do something outside of the course content, stretch myself and expand my knowledge. It was a great way to meet other people with similar interests."
Pupils back the campaign. Chandler's Ford schoolchildren are hoping to see the fruits of their labour this spring after planting bulbs in support of a worldwide Rotary campaign. Staff and pupils at Hiltingbury Infants are looking forward to seeing a field of crocus flowers, which will also show their support for the international End Polio Now movement. Every pupil had the opportunity to plant a bulb after listening in a special assembly to how Rotary had led the campaign to eradicate the disease. A total of 1,000 bulbs, donated by Chandler's Ford and Itchen Valley Rotary, were planted at both Hiltingbury and nearby Murden Junior School in support of the campaign. Hiltingbury Infant School Headteacher, Kathy Moden said, "We were delighted to support Rotary and look forward to seeing the fruits of the children's labour when we will once again be reminded of the End Polio Now campaign." The purple crocus has become a symbol of the fight to end polio, as the colour purple represents the colour of the dye placed on a child's finger to show that they've been immunised against the disease in some developing countries. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the children from Hiltingbury Infant School and planting the crocuses.
Care home can expand. Plans have been unanimously approved to redevelop a care home, despite concerns it would impact on neighbours' privacy. The scheme for the old parsonage care home in Main Road, Otterbourne, will see the facility refurbished with parts demolished and a 2.5-storey building added. Excuse me. It will then be used as a 16-apartment close care facility for residents aged over 65. Objector Helen Ellaby of Main Road urged the City Council Planning Committee to defer a decision on the scheme until they had visited the site to see what impact the development would have. Miss Ellaby told councillors she, as well as other neighbours, would be greatly impacted by overlooking and added concerns over parking, which only accommodated for one space per flat, and noise. Otterbourne Parish Councillor Kevin Stafford also spoke against the scheme. He said that while the development would be good for its residents, that shouldn't come at the cost of existing neighbours. He added, "There is a considerable change and impact on these individual neighbours." However, committee member, Councillor Therese Evans, gave her backing to the scheme, saying, "I understand residents' concerns because it is a very large building, but it is a very large site." Councillor Roger Huckstep added, "I think this is an entirely satisfactory development. The demand for this sort of accommodation is going to grow."
Discussing North Wall's future use. Residents can have their say on what they want to happen to part of Winchester when the city's current leisure closes in a few years. Winchester City Council will be collecting feedback from residents, community groups and anyone with an interest in North Wall's recreation ground at the event this week. People will be asked how they use and value the facilities at North Wall's and seek their suggestions for future improvements. It comes ahead of the closure of the River Park Leisure Centre when the city's new 38 million leisure centre opens at Bar End. The event will provide updates on a recent visitor survey and the pavilion project in North Walls. As previously reported, plans to replace the rundown Winchester Sports Pavilion with a new 600,000 facility were approved last month. The event will also host a range of activities and sports sessions, including tennis, cricket, mini golf, football and rounders. Portfolio holder for the environment, Councillor Jan Warwick, said, "This area of Winchester is very popular and this event marks the start of an important dialogue with the residents to help understand the views and aspirations of the local community. We know that many people will be interested in having their say on the future of this special area of the city." The event comes after Winchester City Council set up an informal policy group, IPG, for the North Walls River Park area, chaired by Councillor Rose Burns. Councillor Burns says, "We see this as an exciting opportunity to preserve the much-loved green spaces and to enhance the sporting and recreational facilities, as well as to restore the historic landmarks and environment. It is also important to take account of the views of residents whose properties are adjacent to the site. The engagement will be held in a marquee in the open space behind the tennis courts on March the 22nd and 23rd. The event will be open from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Friday, March the 22nd, and at 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday, March the 23rd. Which, as this goes out on comes to you on a Saturday, probably won't be of any use to you.
Recruitment drive. An Alsford care company has relaunched a campaign appealing for more people to assist the elderly. Following the success of last year's campaign, Home Instead will bring back the You Can Care initiative. The team are looking to recruit 30 caregivers to deliver more than 50,000 hours of care in 2019. Steve Gapper, owner of Home Instead Central Hampshire, said, "The idea behind the You Can Care campaign is to call out to people who might not have thought about a career in care. Caring is a truly rewarding job, which offers excellent training and flexible hours. When we launched the campaign last year, we saw an upsurge in interest from people looking to join the care sector. As our population continues to age, we are continuing to build our team with kind and compassionate people who want to make a difference to the elderly in the local community." Skills for Care, an independent charity with over 18 years' experience in workforce development, estimates that 8% of roles in adult social care are vacant, which gives an average of approximately 110,000 vacancies at any one time. Joyce Adams, a caregiver for Home Instead, said, "I love the difference we can make to our clients. We make them feel better and make them laugh. Most of our clients are lonely, so our visits are so important. The service is available from as little as 1 hour to 24 hours a day, 7 days a week."
School parents training for cycle ride from Westminster. A team of Winchester parents are planning to complete a 100-mile charity bike ride in aid of a local school. The 25 cyclists will start in London and finish in Winchester on May the 18th, hoping to raise £10,000 for Weston Primary in full flood. Co-organiser Nick Joynes, who runs the Natural Travel Collection in Alsford, said the funds will cover the final amount needed to install an all-weather athletics track this summer. He said, "We are calling it the West to West because the route we think we'll take will start at Westminster Abbey and finish at the school. We all hope to raise £250 minimum each. Everyone is working hard and we train every fortnight. So far, we're up to about 50 miles per practice, so it's definitely getting there. The school already have £30,000 to spend on the track and the final £10,000 will complete the costs." Head teacher Peter Burbridge said, "Weston's Golden Mile track will be approximately 400 metres long and 1.5 metres wide, allowing children to walk or run in pairs. The track will follow a winding route around the edge of our school field, through a wooded area and across grass, resulting in 4 laps of this track, making a golden mile. All of our children and staff will use the track regularly, with significant health benefits being created for the whole school community. Nick developed the idea with Andy Lean and Matt Cobbold, who both have children in year 5, with Nick's twins Hannah and Sophia. He added, "This parent network is what's helped the whole thing along, and it's brilliant that we have got so many people on board. We have lots of dads and 2 mums that are interested. It's a passion of ours, and we're all very committed to provide the children with something that will help a healthy exercise culture at Weston." Several businesses have agreed to sponsor the cycle. Beelun Architects, Happy Hot Tubs, Marshall Volkswagen, Southampton Airport, and St Cross Builders. And there's a lovely photograph of all the intending bicyclists, and in front, all the girls in their blue and yellow uniforms smiling up at the camera.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.